What's going on, everybody? Nate here. We did another roundup of the last week's action, and that's what this is going to be right here. It was a little bit of a slow week, but Melina, Mike, and I break it down pretty well, and then we do a little chatting about who Melina Mike is and why he's on the podcast, and some of the stuff that he does about the around the industry, just getting you a better idea as to who he actually is as a person. And I figured that might be of value to some of the listeners who may not know who he is or his role in the industry quite as much. So we did that, but before we get into that, I wanted to give a huge shout out to a couple of the people that I met last weekend in the expo in Des Moines. It was awesome to be able to get to meet Brett Snowden as well as Ben Young. Those guys have been big supporters of what I've done here for a long time, and it was really cool to finally put a face to the name and get to hang out with you guys for a little while. Tracy, I just can't seem to get away from her. Apparently, every tournament I go to now, she's there, and this one was no different. So it was awesome to hang out with Tracy again. And then it was really cool to get to meet Melina Mike for the first time. We actually met last weekend, and we talk about a little bit on the podcast, but I figured I'd give him another shout out here because it was great meeting him. And Charlie and Heather Bryant. It was pretty awesome to chat with you. A great player, got to learn a lot about coaching, a lot about teaching, and hopefully, I gave him a couple things too that worked for me. Hopefully, he was able to take a little bit away from it too. But I'm sure nowhere near as much as I was able to collect. So it was really cool to be able to get to chat with you, Charlie, as well. And if I'm missing anybody, I'm really sorry. I think that covers up most of it. But if not, then don't hate me too much. So I guess with that, I am going to jump us right into this podcast. Just kidding. I do have one more update that I just forgot about. I got to give a huge shout out for the Patreon. We had a new person join the Patreon this week. So thank you very much to Derek Hagen. He's been around the podcast for a long time, since basically, I think, the beginning. It's been a really long time. And he has joined the Patreon and helping to support the future of it as well. So thank you very much to Derek. And if you would like to join the Patreon and really support the future of what we're doing here, you can do that at patreon.com/queueitup. And now, I am completely out of notifications in the beginning. I think, I hope, I don't know. Maybe I'll come up with something in the next second. Nope. All right. So let's jump into this podcast.
I'm a real deal. I'll shoot your liver out and hand it to you.
What's going on, everybody? We are back for another week. Mike, what's going on?
What's going on, Nate? How you doing, buddy?
Oh, that was a long pause.
I'm sad I
I
got to
thought
see
you were
your.
like going.
I'm sad I got to see your mug again after just seeing you out in Des Moines a few days ago. I thought I'd gotten rid of you.
Well, you did. You can't get rid of me virtually. I'm just like a like this weird bug that just follows you around virtually all over the place. Well, I have
Yeah,
nice things to say.
bling.
I thought it was fun seeing you. It was so
It
much
would.
fun. My life was made there.
No, I enjoyed it. It was a good time. It seemed like it was cut short because I dogged it by planning to leave a little bit early after the one pocket. But yeah, I really enjoy every time I get to go out to the Midwest. Everyone's super great. Got to see you, my boy Bashir, a bunch of people that I met from South Dakota, which was great, and Pat, and just all the players and all the action. It was a lot of fun, man. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was good. I think the days that we were there were a little bit slower than what I was hoping for, but it was kind of nice
Yeah.
because you actually got to spend a lot of time around people as opposed to, spending 5 minutes around 50 people. You got to spend 50 minutes around five people. I thought that was a little bit better, maybe.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah. So I guess for full disclosure, Mike and I were both at the Big Dogs Midwest Expo, which finished up on Sunday. We'll be talking a little bit about that, but I guess as far as the expo part of it, this was the first time I was ever there. It's a little bit lackluster, I think, as far as what I had always imagined it being like. There was maybe 15, maybe not even 15, maybe about 10 booths, you think?
Yeah, something like that. That sounds about right. I'd say closer to 10 than 15.
Yeah. And you know, it was, I mean, there was some cue makers there, some beautiful cues on display, man. Oh, wow. There were some amazing cues. I know they had Jacoby there. They had, well, I guess, you know, who all was there. Why don't you give them a plug?
So they had Pat DeVinny, which I rode up there with Pat. I flew out there a couple of days early to go help Pat finish up with the show. And I'm not a cue maker, but you know, I lent him a couple hands to go and just help him get finished up. And so I was happy to go and travel with him and Fina. Danny ended up showing up later on, after I'd taken off. Across from them, or actually next to them was Jacoby, and those guys were fantastic, real funny guys and down to earth. And then there was Showman and Carpenter, which was pretty incredible because they're, you know, John Showman's a legend of the game and Carpenter as well. So a legendary cue maker. They actually surprised Pat there with a killer cue that got passed around and shot with by everybody. All ivory. Yeah, it was pretty sick. And then they had, let's see. Oh, Doug Beasley was there, another cue maker. And I'd only known him from Dennis, like sponsoring Dennis, I mean, but man, I didn't realize that dude can go and build like that. I mean, he had some cues with some work in there that was just absolutely incredible. And his aesthetic was great. I didn't get to hit a ball with one. But damn, if they even play a fraction of how good they looked, that was really, it wasn't like that traditional style like you saw with Showman and them, which I got a lot of respect for them as well and what they do, of course. But yeah, Doug's cues were just fantastic. And then Heather and Charlie, Brutal. So the clothing company, they always do a lot of great things and they travel around the country. And yeah, those are pretty, I know there was like one or two others that I had seen there, but I don't know who that other lady was. And what, it was weird. They didn't even have a sign on their booth. Like, I don't even know what company it was. It was the oddest thing. But yeah, it was a good time. I don't, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not. I didn't know who they were either.
Yeah, they were on that back wall, but I mean, it was cool. I liked it. I was hoping for more foot traffic, and I hope they did get more foot traffic during the weekend when the nine ball opened up.
When I was leaving on Thursday, that place was starting to really, really, really pack up to the point where it actually
that's good.
It was actually pretty difficult to start walking around that place, and this was Thursday at, I don't know, maybe I left at 4 o'clock, something like that. It was actually starting to get difficult to actually walk through that place with how many people were in there. And you were in there. I mean, the corridors that you're kind of supposed to walk through, there's a couple spots where it gets real tight. And, you know, you always have those idiots that think that that's the best place to congregate and, you know, hang out. So you got to walk through like three rows of people through a 3-foot window. And it's just, but it was really starting to fill up.
Yeah. The only thing that, I mean, the openness on that side of it was good. I didn't like how they had a majority of the 9-foot tables on that side where you really couldn't get to them to go and see.
Yeah.
Like, unless you're down that one row that's around the 10-footer. But aside from that, I mean, you had to go and walk through the bar table side, and then you're standing up against the wall. People are playing their games, and I was just like, what kind of, I mean, I didn't like
they
that
make
setup.
It very
I
think exclusionary.
They yeah. Which, I mean, I'm sure the players going to appreciate because they kind of like the pros anyway, they maybe get their, you know, their piece over there. But I was hoping for just a little bit better in that regard because I'm, you know, rail bird. I enjoy sweating the matches from the side. So, but I did get to see some good one pocket. And plus the people were just great, man. Everyone up there is just always super nice. So I always enjoy going to the Midwest, and I'll be looking for another excuse to go back pretty soon.
Yeah, it was a pretty good time. I was only there for maybe about a day, I guess, in totality. I thought it was a lot of fun. Like I said, I was a little bit surprised with how small it was. I kind of think that tournament needs to happen maybe more in a convention center type of thing than a pool room. Because I don't know too many pool rooms that are significantly bigger than Big Dogs. I don't, certainly in the Midwest, I don't know too
They're
many
big.
Pool rooms that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a big pool room. And I think they had, what did they end up having? I think they had like 40 tables. I think they have 40 tables in there, something like that. Does that sound right?
Oh, I'd say, yeah, for sure. That sounds real reasonable.
Yeah, something like that. So, yeah, I mean, it was a fun tournament to go to. It was a good time. I guess we could take a little time. Let's start talking about what actually happened. We can start with the one pocket. Maybe a little bit of a surprise, maybe not. Shane takes that one down. And I kind of thought there was an interesting comment that he made at the end of it, but I'm going to wait till the end of our analysis to give that. But what'd you think of that one?
Yeah, I mean, it's you never know how much interest Shane has in one pocket and how much effort he'll go and give, because I think he has a real disdain for the game, and I think that's courteous nice. About it. I don't think he gives two shits about one pocket personally. And, I mean, I've heard it from him, so he doesn't like how long it takes. But I mean, he shows that anything on a pool table, he's gonna be amazing at, and he has the potential of being in the top 1% of 1% players in the world, and no matter what discipline that you're in on a pool table. So, and it was a pretty big field, a pretty solid field. You talk about Tony, Alex, Carlo, who just snapped off a one pocket tournament in Houston. Roberto was back.
Well, here I can run down the top 10 here. Shane Van Boni gets first. Roland Garcia, a little bit of a surprise there, but I mean, Roland Garcia is very
surprised.
Yeah, he's still a world champion runner up. I mean, the dude can play. Tony Choen takes third. Alex Pagulayan takes fourth. Warren Kiamko fifth, sixth with Roberto Gomez. Billy Thorpe, Fedor Gorst, seventh, eighth. More players in the field. Jeremy Jones is still in there. Carlo Beato went two and out. I mean, that's Devin Poteet.
Well, but he's been playing
some strong pool.
Devin's playing good. Carlo ran into Roland, which I was surprised. I think that both of Carlo's matches, if I'm not mistaken, went hill-hill. I was real surprised to see Roland go and get as deep as he did. Not that Roland's not a great player, because you'll always see him go deep, but he's always the bridesmaid. He'll always come up just a little short, it seems like, more often than not. But you never really see him play one pocket. Yeah. I mean, I watch a lot of one pocket, and I haven't seen him go and play like that. So
Carlo lost to Roland surprised. On the hill, and then he lost to Tony Cho 4-1 on the B side. That's a brutal draw, man.
Yeah.
Woo.
No. It was closer than that, because I watched a lot of it. It was something like, if it wasn't hill-hill, then Tony won 4-2. But I know, because I was – so I go in there the next day, and I was watching I was sitting by where Devin and Roland were playing at, because that was a battle. Devin was up, I think, 3-1, and Roland comes back to win hill-hill. And then to the left of that was Shane and Fedor. And really, that was the main one that I wanted to watch, just to see, like, where Fedor was at in his one-pocket game. I was really, really curious to go and see that. And I don't remember the exact score, but I know that Fedor was holding his own, you know, and he shoots so straight.
According to Digital Pool.
Yeah. Yeah. He can hit a straight back, you know, so you got to be careful. And he can get to eight. He still has a lot of learning when it comes to the moving part of it, but he's hungry and he's excited to go and get in there. He's not just sitting down and watching, you know, he's getting in the grease with those guys playing in those, you know, pretty expensive buy-in tournaments. So, and then, yeah, I was able to go and sweat a lot of Tony and Carlo, but there was just, it was a premier one pocket. When I talked to Tony before he played, when Alex and Warren were playing, I think, they said they're playing on 4.5. So that's kind of, you know,
big pockets.
I don't like that for one pocket. And it really gives these other guys who maybe don't know how to move, it gives them a lot of leeway to kind of still be able to contend, because they're able to go and make more balls. So,
yeah.
It was a great – I really enjoyed it, man. Shane's always going to be in the mix. But
too talented. Yeah. He's too talented not to be.
Yeah, but he don't care. I mean – he talked about it on a couple of my posts. Like, he just hates playing one pocket. It's a 3.5 hour final.
And that was the comment that he made that I saw was, I think he made the comment, 3.5 hours for a 7-game final. How can people find that entertaining? And, I mean, I was hoping to have, I was actually hoping to have Rob on here, because Rob or even like Mike Pinoza or Mike, Mike Howerton for this week because they don't care about one pocket at all. You love it more than probably any other game, right? That's your favorite game.
Yeah, personally. I mean, it's just, for me, it's hard to see like the same break and pattern. And it's just because they're so great at racking the balls. They're so great at controlling all those balls. They're so great at pocketing a ball that they make it look remedial. And it's not that I don't enjoy seeing a good rotation battle, but it's just hard to see the same shit over and over again when they're this far from the ball, you know, and they get perfect. Like, they make it look so simple, you know, and me and you know better, right? Because we know how difficult the game is and how to go and get there, you know, and the consistency and the level to stay that focused and surgical throughout a set over and over again, set after set, right, the deeper you go. But, yeah, they make it look just too – they can make it a little boring at times, you know. And yeah, that's my only knock on. I like to see them kind of battle, you know.
Yeah. So I'm kind of somewhere in the middle. Like, I don't find one pocket appointment viewing. Like, every now and then, I think, for example, I think they had when Corey Duell was playing Justin Hall, there was another big matchup that was going on. And it might have been Sky and Dennis the first time. Was that, does that sound right? Or maybe Shane and Dennis the first time. There was a big matchup going on when Corey was playing against Justin Hall.
It was, because I think I was in Dallas at the time. Or maybe it was Fedor and I think it might have been Fedor and Jeff, now that I think about it. But
yeah, it could have, whatever. Yeah, I think it was Fedor and Jeff. And to be honest with you, like, if I have something to watch besides One Pocket, I'm not going to watch One Pocket. Like, I probably watched maybe 15 minutes of Justin and Corey live anyways. And I watched the entire Fedor and DeLuna matchup. Like, if I have something better to watch, I'm probably going to, but I'm very happy watching One Pocket. If Fedor and DeLuna weren't playing, I would have watched every second of it. It's just, I would consider myself probably an equal opportunist One Pocket fan. I'll watch it. I'll watch it if there's nothing else. Yeah. I think that's a discussion that, I mean, not that we have to really dive too deep into that, but it would have been nice to have somebody on here that just doesn't give a rip about One Pocket. And maybe that's a discussion we can have in the future as to, you know, kind of what sucks us into
that. No, I mean, it's fair. And I mean, you see that on both sides when you talk to a fan of someone who really enjoys rotation versus a fan of someone who really enjoys One Pocket. Everyone's going to go and have their passions about it, right? And that's what's great about the game. And I can certainly – and it's not that – I still love watching professional players go and play, and even – semi-pros and even amateurs going banging balls, you know, because seeing guys who go and don't miss can get boring after a while. But there's an appreciation on both sides. I want to see those guys get tested. Like, in other words, like, if they got a straight shot, and this is what I love about the World Pool Masters and bringing in those 4-inch pockets, is that nothing was a gimme, you know. I want to see it, like, as tough as it can possibly be for them, so that way there's never going to be a dull moment. You know, I think Billy had in a shot during the World Pool Masters where the guy's literally like 6 inches from the pocket and he's trying to cheat it on the side and he misses it. You know, and a straight in shot that just jaws up and you know, dresses up on the opposite corner. I love seeing stuff like that. I don't want to see where it's boring. I don't want to see where it just – everything's like playing on a 9-foot valley. You know, that's just me.
Keep it competitive. I like that, yeah. So,
yeah.
I guess unless there's anything else about the One Pocket that you thought was interesting or that you wanted to discuss?
Well, Tony and Alex had some battles. And the first time they go and play, which was actually the first round, they were the pick of the litter, both those two guys. And Tony should have gone up 3-1. Alex steals it, I think, went in 4-2. And then on the back end, on the loser side, Tony ends up doing what he should have done the first time, which is win 4-2. So I don't know it to be for sure, but I think we're going to see something involving Tony and another top player coming up real soon. So
and Tony said that in a post. Do you have any insider information on that? Don't give it away, of course, but do you?
No, I don't want to piss off Tony. So I know it's going to be good. And it's here's what I said the other day, is that I've never seen One Pocket be so wide open. Never. No. Because it's usually just been Dennis and Alex, and then everybody else is fighting for third place. Anytime those two are involved in a One Pocket tournament. And it's not the case anymore. anybody can go and get there. And Tony is playing pretty incredible right now. So I think now is the best time. And before COVID, I mean, Alex was just a different player. But, I mean, for whatever reason, he's not. Dennis was the same way whenever he came back. Filler didn't look as sharp whenever he goes and started playing again. All these guys are, like, knocking off a year of rust, basically, and getting back into competition. So I think now's a great time to go and see an Elite One Pocket matchup. And I'm pretty sure we're going to be able to. So stay tuned.
Yep. So going into, I guess, let's move on to the 10 ball. Alex Pagulayan, speaking of which, snaps this one off. He loses his third match and comes back through and double dips Sky in the finals. Played stupid strong. I mean, I had a couple shots for him in the last, I feel like the last couple of months, just like, what, you know, where's Alex at? Where's, you know, he's too good of a player to just fall off the cliff like this and just find out that, you know, he gets in every single one pocket, goes two and out or three and out, and, you know, plays in all these big 10 ball tournaments and can't get anything done. And now the last two weekends, he's got a second place and a first place finish in 10 ball, which is probably his worst game since his break is not quite well. It's not there at all. Let's just be frank. As far as the top players,
you got Fedor, you got Fedor, you got Shane,
Tyler,
you got Sky, you got Tyler Steyer. I mean, you talk about guys with elite Monster 10 breaks. Ball breaks, maybe not Sky, in that mix, but definitely Fedor, Shane, and Tyler with, you know,
right there's super right there's elite 10 ball breaks. Three of the top five breakers in the world. And, you know,
yeah. And Alex knocked off Shane, I think, two times. He sent him to the one lost side and he sent his ass home. So I think that shows the difference between breaking with a triangle versus breaking with a template. And I'm not trying to knock Alex's win at all. But I did see a couple times, like, not just in that match, but I saw a couple times where guys were breaking from the side. And I think it was to more of making a moving game. Yeah, because I think it was just the inconsistency that they were getting, hitting it square, leaving everything wide open. So at least that was the only way I could wrap my head around it, was that they were trying to break from the side just so that way it gets more clusters. And then it becomes more of like, you got to move better. You got to bank better. You got to play safes better.
And that's Alex's game.
But Alex, for sure. But the surprising part was I saw Alex go and break head up a few times and his break looked pretty good, you know, surprisingly. So maybe he's just in that rotation stroke versus, you know, being in one pocket stroke and all those little ticky shots and, you know, getting his speed down and his spin and all that, you know, which is going to come with time. But yeah, who would have known that? I mean, who would have picked Alex in that field? I mean, I'm not trying to knock the guy at all, but I just, out of all those elite 10 ball players, I was very surprised.
Well, I was actually, to wrap up what you're at, Alex did play Shane twice, beat him both times, and the combined score was 22-10. That's pretty strong against maybe the best 10 ball player to ever do it. I mean, that's pretty strong. He also beat, well, here's his run. I mean, let's go through the bracket real quick. I mean, he double dips Sky Woodward in the finals. He beats Fedor Gorst for third. He beats Shane Van Boning for fourth. He beats Roberto Gomez for fifth and Warren Kiyomko on the other side by Shane gets a fifth, sixth. So Warren Kiyomko and Roberto Gomez get fifth, sixth. We got Carlo Beato and Billy Thorpe getting seventh, eighth. And, you know, just throwing it out there, I guess, Tony Choan, Devin Petit, Danny Olsen get ninth through 12th. And then some Ezequiel Ramirez.
Hey, Danny can break 10 ball too. I don't know who the hell that is. Ezekiel.
Yeah, I don't know who it is.
Danny can break 10 ball good, and him and Tyler had a battle, which was pretty gross. I was able to catch, like, a little bit of it because they were playing on the back table from the TV table. But evidently, Danny was up big. Tyler fights back. Danny was on the hill first, something like 10-9. It goes hill. Tyler breaks and runs to the 10 and leaves it up. It was pretty gross. And Tyler pretty frustrated about it, and rightfully so, you know. But, yeah, I mean, there's some elite 10 ball players in that field. So for Alex to do what he did says a lot, you know. But, like, I just – and Carlo's a monster with a triangle too, you know, because he's Filipino and
– Yeah, he knows how to break those slug racks.
Yeah, for sure. But I don't know, man. We'll see. Again, it's 4.5-inch pockets. Any of those guys are capable. But more often than not, you see that when the guy who comes from the one loss side on the last day, especially when it comes to rotation, ends up double dipping or forcing at least second set more often than not, because they're walking in having played all day long in full stroke on the same table, whereas the guy who won the hot seat, you know, he's been sitting cold till 7 o'clock at night, you know? So I don't know. What do you think about that, man?
I mean, at the end of the day, I think you're a professional and you got to be ready to go. And what I found out throughout my time promoting this game is there is the consummate professional, the person who's going to be, you know, their match ends up at 11 o'clock and they know that they got to play at 9 a.m. or 10 a.m. And they're having a drink at the bar and then they're going back to the room and getting to sleep. And then there's the player that stays out till 4 a.m. partying and then may or may not sleep through their alarm and make it to the match the next morning. But regardless, even if they do show up, you know, they're out on 5 hours of sleep and, you know, you're kind of rushing at that point in time because we've all done it. I'm not going to say anything as far as that goes, but you know, there are types of players.
Might as well.
There are types of players that stay out and party, and there's types of players that, you know, get the rest. And I think to go really quickly to what you're saying is, I think there's a type of player who's ready in the morning and there's types of players who aren't. And I think it's kind of dependent on the player. That now Sky is a player that I think he could do that. And he does sometimes. I'm not saying he does it all the time. He does like the party. He likes to have a good time. He likes to, you know, have some fun. But I've never actually seen that affect Sky. I don't think I have. I think whenever I see Sky, he looks prepared for the most part.
Well, I was meaning more of like, and I mean, you're right. First of all, you're absolutely right. but I guess I was meaning it more in the sense of like the guy who's coming on the one loss side has been playing pool on that table all day long.
Especially, you know what I mean? Especially with the TV tables. You get that down. Yeah. There is something to that.
Yeah, so you've been on that same – if you're barreling through that last day, right, having to go and play 3 or 4 matches, you know, you go into that final with a lot of experience and being super comfortable because obviously you figured out the break by that point, right, and you're aware of how the table is playing, how the rail – I mean, you know, you just – I think you have a lot more confidence going into it even though you only got one bullet, if that makes sense.
So here's the question I have for you then, because of course you're playing on the same equipment. It's not like Sky hadn't played on that table before then, but like you're saying, you know, Alex is coming in straight off the table, ready to go on it. How do you think that's worth 2 games for Sky to just kind of build himself into that same level of comfort that Alex has? You think that's a 2-game spot, a 1.5 game spot? What do you think on that?
I mean, I think 1.5, you know, there is an advantage. I don't, it's an interesting one. But really I think that like it, well, I mean, I think like in regards to that particular matchup for me anyway, like on paper, I would have figured Sky would have been the favorite. So the fact that Alex is the favorite because of coming in, having played on that match versus I think Sky's playing better right now. So I think it ended up kind of offsetting a little bit. Every matchup's going to be different, obviously. But yeah, I mean, Sky's obviously in stroke though. And there's no doubt about that. Alex having a big win, who knows what that's going to go and do for him with all these events we got coming up here in the US. You know, we got the World 10 Ball, along with a few others. So,
Diamond Las Vegas.
Yeah, I'm excited, man. Are you going to be out there?
Yeah, I'll be out there for that. You?
Yeah, good deal, man. I'll be able to see you. We'll be going out. Yeah. We're going right after the Texas Open. I'm actually here at Hampshire's right now. We're doing a big batch of jump cues to get ready for the Texas Open and then for BCA. So
awesome.
It'll be good. I'm looking forward to it. And it looks like a lot of these guys are starting to play some more, right? Like there was a strong group of players out there in Des Moines, and they go to the middle of nowhere to go in and match up. So I'm just glad Paul's back.
Well, isn't it kind of weird that like, okay, let's take the statement that you just made kind of from like 50,000 foot. Isn't it kind of weird that we're at the point in pool where like why would these players go to this rink-a-dink little town in the middle of nowhere? Hard to get to, brutal to actually get there as far as like travel and airfares and blah, 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 blah. It's like super hard to get to. And we're at the point now where there's enough events, big events, great events going on that you're like, why are these players still going to an event like that? Isn't it great that we're in a place like that with pool?
Well,
because this would have been, this would have been a normal tour stop 10 years ago because they have to, right?
Yeah, I mean, but I mean, like, even if you think about, like, a tennis, for example, I mean, they still have, like, the Cincinnati Open, you know? They still have, like, the Orlando Classic or something, you know?
Yeah.
So it's not just Wimbledon and you know, New York for the U.S. Open. So they got regional events along the way. And
but if you look at those events, Novak Djokovic and Roger Federer aren't showing up to that event, right?
Well, I mean, it depends because sometimes they'll want to go and get ready for the major, you know, so they'll show up ahead of time to kind of make sure they're in full gear, you know, come whatever it is, Wimbledon or whatever, you know. So and I like watching tennis quite a bit, but I mean there's also changes there. They'll be playing for two sets versus, you know, playing for three during the major. So
yeah,
but my point is that, like, the pool players are gonna go and chase whatever added money I think they can go and get, you know. And it's tough right now, and a lot of them are.
Speaking of added money, how about the Texas Open? Wow.
Yeah, 38,000 500 right now.
Last I saw, it was 42,000.
Oh, maybe they upped it again.
Yeah, okay. They upped it. Yeah, yeah. It's up to. I think right around $42,000 added.
Yeah, I'm here about 30 minutes right now from Skinny Bob's, and I'm just gonna do a little plug here real quick, but. Part of that extra added money is coming from us and Hanshu Custom Cues. People that don't know, James is just a really giving guy, and I'm kind of like the business side of things where I'm like, I don't want to sponsor this, I don't want to do that. You know, like you really got to go and sell me to go and have me jump in, just because I'm trying to keep the business financially responsible right now. Not that I don't love giving back to the game, because I do, and I do sponsor things and not, but I'm trying to just tighten it up some. But James got a long history with the Texas Open. He asked me if we could do 7 jump cues to go and essentially double the added money for the women's event, because they only had $2,500 added. So, which we are, thanks, but yeah, we are raising the money. Well, first of all, we're guaranteeing the money no matter what. But to help offset that cost, we are selling jump cues. I am going to be raffling some stuff off, but either way, the money's guaranteed. So. Just because if you see a flyer saying we're raising the money to get there, it's just to help us offset those costs. So anybody that's looking for anything, get with
and
me.
And it's for the women. We'll so buy some damn raffle tickets. The men have been getting a lot of love for added events the last few years. It's time the women catch up. We need to grow both sides of the sport. It's just not going to work.
Yeah, for sure. And that's why, like, when given James's history and the amount of players that he's gone, and not just women players, but just players in general that he's gone and supported from here in Texas, because he's from here. I really couldn't argue with him on it, and I'm really proud. I'm really excited and looking forward to it, but it's coming sooner than you think, man. So that's why I'm here now. I've literally, over the last like 10 weeks, I've maybe been at home for 2 weeks. And then in the next 8 weeks, I'll be lucky if I'm home for 2 weeks. So it's a lot of traveling. I'm getting burnt out a little bit, but I'm trying to just recharge and looking forward to being out there at the Open. It's going to be fantastic. It's going to be one pocket. I think that's 10,000 added, $1,000 entry. You want to talk about some stacked players, it's going to be huge. And then, of course, the nine ball, so and the women's event. So it's going to be great, man. Ring games, you name it. It's going to be a week of fun. So I'll be looking forward to it.
Yeah, should be a good time. And if people want to get involved with these raffles, help you out, raise some money for the ladies as well as the event as a whole, where are they finding it?
My Facebook page at Molina Mike, or you can also message the business page, Hanshu Custom Cues. We can get you set up from there. Right now, I don't have a raffle up because we just finished a queue. I'm just trying to space them out a little bit. But if you're just looking to buy direct, you can get with me on there also. But probably in the next few days, I'm going to have another one up. So we can't thank support enough. I mean, the raffle literally filled in like I think 3 or 4 hours, so the first one went great, but we're not done yet. We're just trying to give back to the game, man, you know, whether it's doing stuff like this and giving our time, or, you know, giving our time by being in the shop and building and, you know, whatever we can do. So we want to see things grow.
Well, you know, Mike, grab or get me all your information. I'll run one of those from the Cue It Up Network page too. So we'll fill one for you. How's that?
Hey, thanks, man. I appreciate that.
That'll help you out. So if you guys are listening to this, you guys want a chance at winning a James Hanshew jump cue. These things are amazing jump cues. I'm very, very, I love my Q-Tech. I think the Q-Tech is the best jump cue on the market. James Hanshew is right behind it. There is not another company that I want to name before probably James Hanshew. They are that good. So they're,
The thing, I just want to let people know where I've been pushing his ass. The finish is better than ever. And I'm not just saying that because I'm here helping him. I've been pushing them. We're coming up with a new aesthetic as well, new designs. But we're not going to give up the performance because the performance is everything. But just it's not going to be the same look you've been seeing over the last few years. So just stay tuned, and we're going to be debuting at the Texas Open. So
perfect. Thanks. All right. So let's move on from there. In conclusion, we're going to run one for the through the Cue It Up podcast page. So if you guys want to jump on that, I'll get that up right after this podcast is released, which I guess will be in about an hour, hopefully from now. But if you want to partake in mine, or if you want to partake in Mike's, Molina Mike on Facebook, check that out. And I guess let's move on. I think that's all we got for we can say Christina Tkach won the nine ball. What a player she's turning into.
Oh, yeah.
She is so much. Speaking of giving the lady some love, let's Christina Tkach. I got to meet her for the first time in person. She is just as pleasant off the table as she is on the table. I mean, she is so nice. She's like the sweetest.
No, she really is. I had hit up Fedor to go and because he's a good friend of mine. I hit him up to do some lessons, and he was like, "Mike, get with Christina. She's a lot better at giving lessons, and any excuse I can go into to help support players, I'm all about." So I decided to get a lesson from Christina, and she's tough. Well, she's a tough teacher, but it was tough because of. I was trying to overcome issues in my game that I was trying to go and do. But, like, as far as her and her personality, she was fantastic. Just like you said, super pleasant, a really nice girl, a great teacher. She explains things very, very well. So if you see her out in the road and if you're interested in upping your game, I would say definitely get with her. Her rates are very affordable. And it's just she's just a good person. So anyone that's good in pool that's trying to go and keep going on the road, I'm all about it. And yes, she did go and win the and it was an open event. It wasn't just the win.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was an open event. So kudos to her, man, and they're able to get some money. And I think right now they're actually in St. Louis doing some stuff with my buddy Brendan Sullivan out at the Players Club. They're doing things with Justin Bergman and Devin Poteet, which Devin's playing real good right now. I saw him firsthand.
Yeah,
so it's good.
Yeah, he really is. So I guess that's, I don't know, does that pretty much wrap up where we're at as far as the – that was a lot longer of a discussion on that than I was planning on taking, but I think there's some good stuff in there. So
sorry, buddy.
No reason to cut that off. Let's talk about the U.S. Open payouts. These have gotten a lot of criticisms on both sides of the aisle. I'm not going to beat myself, but I think they are beeping – amazing. I think they're perfect for exactly where we are at. And I guess I'm asking you, and then I'm just taking over and saying it first. So haha, I get to go first. I think they're exactly perfect for where we're at right now in pool. The game is being built. The game needs sustainability, not just at the top, but all the way down the rung. They're paying out half of the field. And what is it like? The last one is 750. So basically half of the field at least is getting their money back. As far as sustainability and allowing the players to survive in this game, taking a grand out there, dropping it, losing it, and, you know, sometimes it's not their money, sometimes it is. But even if it's not their money, the point is you got a backer. A backer's only going to ride with you for so long if you're losing their role. So I think it's genius. It gives a lot of players an opportunity to win money, and they found a way to still make it where the I think like 95% of the money is going out to the top five players, but everybody's getting a little bit to help sustain. I think it's genius what they did. I really do. And I think it's exactly, you know, maybe in 5 years from now when the game's built and we're, you know, we're really just living off of what the game is built in. We're riding high. Everybody's making $300,000 to $500,000 a year. You want to make it a little bit more top heavy? Great, go for it. But right now, for where the pool is in the world, I think we really need to just be able to sustain our champions and give them an opportunity to make some money. So I guess, Mike, what do you think about them?
I got to tread a little lightly here because I haven't always been on Matchroom and Emily's good side. But, you know, I do have some integrity, so I'll give my honest opinion. I think that I understand what you're saying, and I think it'd be good if it was deeper. If it was deeper. Number one, kudos to them after a year of, I'm sure they lost their ass in the Moscone Cup. I'm sure they lost their ass canceling the U.S. Open. I don't know their financials, but I'd imagine that last year was pretty tough on them just because of everything going on. Now, with that in mind, they still come back the next year and add 108,000. So, number one, kudos to them for that because that's mad props. And there's not companies that are going and giving money like that in the game. So, they can go and do what they want. But with that said, I just think it's a little deep for me. I'm the kind of person where I don't want to break even. I want to go and either win some money or I want to go and lose some money. And even if, let's say, those guys that are – I'm looking at it right now, 66 through 97, yeah, they're getting their entry fee back. They're getting back the 750. But you're still losing your ass when it comes to hotels, food, flights. So you really aren't cracking any kind of nut. I would have rather have seen that 24,000 go in towards the back end and make maybe 1 through 32nd a little juicier. The same thing with, 50 through 65, they're getting 1,000 back. I don't know. You're talking about $40,000 there, where I just think it would have been better served for me to have it been on like 1 through 32nd. Take that 40,000 from essentially 33rd on and just make the 1 through 32nd payouts that much better for those guys, you know, where you're still having to go somewhat deep, but at that point, the cream's going to go and rise to the top when you talk about that amount of players. Because, I mean, really, I don't know who it was, if it was Dennis Hatch or Rodney Morris, but one of them was saying you basically got to go through the last 16 to break even, you know, if you're lucky. So that's tough, man. You know?
Yeah. And
I just think that 40,000 could have been spent a little better, you know?
And I totally understand that. And I think you're right to a point, but I do think that pool players have their own worst enemies in a sense. And let's use somebody like Devin Poteet, because I mean, he's been playing so strong for the last 3 to 4 months, or even Justin Espinosa, somebody like that, who's been playing some really, really, really strong pool. And when you see people on the upswing, you have plenty of people that are ready to start backing you financially and trying to jump on that train of making some money. And we all know, you know, we all know that Devin Poteet does not have the cash flow to be able to survive at this game probably for 4 months without getting a cash, right? I mean, the players at the bottom end, and I'm not trying to like dog on Devin saying he's not a top player, but I mean, at this point in his career, he's not. And same with Justin Espinosa. They don't have the financial backing, I don't think, to be able to really make it that long in this industry without a cash. So the idea of this is maybe – then why I think it's kind of your pool players are their own worst enemy is, you know, I think there's a big difference to a backer who's posting 750 to this player to get him into this field to see that, hey, you know, I didn't lose 750 there. I only lost, you know, maybe you have it set up to where, you know, you get it all back and anything over profit, you whatever it is for your backers. I mean, whatever the deal you make, it's one more bullet that a backer didn't lose. And so that's one more time that at least one more time where a backer can look at the player and be like, all right, they didn't cost me anything here. Let's continue supporting them and getting them out there to hopefully in the future. I mean, golfers don't have backers, right? Golfers aren't asking people to pay their U.S. Opens. Hopefully we can build the sport enough. And maybe in 5 years from now, Matchroom is adding 500,000 to this. And then you don't have to worry about backers at all. It's just kind of one more kicking the can down the road until the players don't need the backing like they do now. That's kind of how I look at it.
Yeah. I mean, like in regards to Devin, I think he's got his own room. So I think financially Devin's all right.
Is he? I don't know a lot about outside. Devin.
Yeah. If I'm not mistaken, but for sure, like Justin can be champions, you know, and not just in the bar table. Justin can get there with anybody. He's beaten Chang a couple of times in the same tournament. He's beaten, I think, Kazakis in a tournament. He can get there with anyone if his head's right. Justin is that strong of a player. But for sure, and I can understand what you're saying. At the end of the day, you know, whenever Matchroom took over snooker, and we talked about this a little bit last night on the Booth Brothers, but they didn't start off by saying – or they didn't start off by having, you know, over $600,000 to first place overnight. You know, they took over this the game and they built it up year after year. Everything got better, and I got enough faith to think that Matchroom's going to be able to do the same thing, or at least hope, right? I hope they're going to be able to do it. And until they prove me wrong, they deserve the benefit of the doubt because nobody else is going and doing it. But I know for like the pros, I mean, it's tough, man. You know, you gotta hope you get. I would much rather have seen just it be a little juicier to get to the last 16 or the last 32. You know, even if you get to the semis, you're basically getting 12,000. Runner ups getting 25,000, which is great for them, you know. But everybody else is still gonna be pretty stuck. But the good thing is that in that time, there's a lot of other events going on here in the States, Vegas, Diamond Open. The Diamond Open and the World 10 Ball. There's another event being talked about. Yeah, there's another Texas Open, another $40,000 added event that's going to be on the East Coast, I think at the end of September. So there's a lot of events going on that players are going to have a chance to go and make some money. But yeah, just in regards to this, Matchroom is not with their head under a rock. You know, they hear everything going on. They hear the talk. They'll take feedback from, you know, top players. And if they feel it needs to be adjusted, they will. But at the end of the day, they want the game to grow. They want these players to be able to go and make money. I remember, I don't think it was on this podcast, but hearing it on one that, what's his name? It's gonna kill me. That guy who does it with Darren. Oh, man.
Oh, Philly. Not Philly. It's You're talking about Billiard Network?
Yeah. And I talked to that guy a couple times, too. I can't remember his damn name. Anyway, you know, and no disrespect to him for forgetting. My memory's just horrible. But I remember one time they had Kareem on there from Predator, the owner of Predator. And they were talking about how Predator was taking over the market in a sense and sponsoring players, sponsoring events, blah, blah, blah. But something that was pretty amazing to me was that he had said something like, I can't wait till these players come to me and say, Kareem, I can't wear a Predator patch this event because I'm getting paid $1 million to go and wear a Nissan patch or an Audi patch or a Snicker, whatever it is, you know, a Wish patch, whatever. And that was great. It made me have more respect for them, you know, to go and hear that. And I think Matchroom is in that same boat where at the end of the day, they want the game to grow. They want sponsors to go and come in. Players have to play ball too, but they want to be able to see things going and get bigger and better, but just trust the process. You know, don't dig your feet in and bitch about it the whole time leading up to it.
And that's exactly what I think is going to happen, right? They're going to make it to where this is a $600,000 first prize. It might take 10 years. It might take 15 years. And my outlook on this is let's let enough of these pool players survive. Maybe you're not going to thrive for the next 5 years, but you're going to survive and you're going to stay in the industry to where, you know, Justin Espinosa doesn't get burnt out because, you know, he's on the road for 30 weeks a year and he's barely covering his hotel costs while he's there. Right. The idea is let's allow them to survive. Maybe you're not thriving. Maybe you're not buying a BMW or an Audi, but you're surviving and you're not scraping at the bottom of the barrel to do it and getting burnt out from not having anything. And next thing you know, you're selling cars in Florida or something like that. Cause that seems, you know, that's the Dennis Hatch, even Rodney Morris. I mean, Rodney Morris is one of the best to do it.
Hey, Donnie.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right. I mean, that's another perfect example. There's too much talent that is lost in this game because they can't survive long enough for the fruits to be, you know.
Well, but you have to be smart financially too. I mean, these guys who are falling back on opening a dealership and then bitching about payouts, and then they're making a post saying, "Hey, I'm looking for a backer, but I'm playing great." It's like, I mean, it doesn't. There is that, it's not a good look.
Yeah, there is that as well. But there's always going to be those people. So,
yeah. But, I mean, but you know, that's why I really respect the European approach, because those guys are, I mean, they're having to pay so much damn money to go and come over here. You know, look, there's the wife. She's over here sneaking in around here. you know, they're having to pay a lot more money to go and come over here. And then you see some guys who are here in the States who are not, you know, maybe are being a little nitty, don't go and pay the $750. They wait a day or two, and all of a sudden it's filled up, and it's like, you can't complain. You had a shot, you know?
Yep, absolutely. So, no, I think that's a pretty good discussion on the U.S. Open payouts. I mean, every single the fact that we can sit here and talk about it for 25 minutes shows exactly where pool is, or either that or there's a lot of really silly listeners out there that have nothing better to do with their life.
We appreciate you, Joe.
Yeah, we love you all, of course. But I think there's enough hype around pool now that we can start talking about these things. And it's interesting. And it's, you know, we're nitpicking whether or not Matchroom is perfecting the sport in the fastest way possible, or if they're, you know, taking a couple forks here and there that aren't as optimal as they can be. The point is we're still moving forward. And I think that's really exciting. So
they're trying, man. They're doing the best. And
they're grinding through it.
If I could help out. Yeah, if we could help out by giving just, you know, any publicity and exposure is good. But these debates are happening online. You know, you've seen everybody go and do it, from Omega Mike to Roy. And I saw Chris Melling ask for it, which is actually where I first got that picture from, was from Chris's post. And but at the end of the day, listen, you got to swing at making 50. Go make the best of it. Let's get it. You
know? Yep. And get that title. All right. So I guess the last thing that I wanted to talk about is, you've been on the podcast now. I think probably the first time we had you on was probably well over a year ago at this point. And we never actually really talked about you and, you know, what you do. We talk about kind of what you're doing in the industry now, but I am curious and I want to know, how did you actually get your start in pool? So we're going to do just a little bit of an interview from here where I'm going to interview you and get a little bit more information out of you. So where did you get your start in the game?
All right, full disclosure, Nate didn't give me any cupcake heads up here, so I don't have any clue what he's asking me. He did tell me we were going to touch base on it, but I haven't heard any of these questions. But I don't know, man. I don't know when all this had started. I've always been a fan of the game and international play, and I was a guy who was staying up at 4 in the morning to watch China Open finals go on, and, you know, the preliminary and the qualifiers and the All Japans and the World Championships. And I've just always appreciated top level pool being played. And somehow or another, when I finally got on Facebook, because I wasn't on there for, you know, long at all. I mean, I was a late bloomer, I guess, to social media. I realized what a big tool it was. And before this, I was actually working, doing scaffolding in the refineries, and I was gone from my girls for, you know, 6 months at a time, and I was making good money, but I never got to see my kids. And about five, maybe like 6 years ago now, I got laid off, and I thought, well, you know, flipping cues was kind of a hobby, and I did it here or there. It really was an excuse to keep Tina off my back and still be able to try out some, you know, different cues. And I said, I'll take 6 months off. I'll collect unemployment. And then once my unemployment's done, I'll get back to it. And I've been fortunate enough to where whatever it is that I've been doing has kind of snowballed. And here I am all these years later. But I mean, I'm still trying to grind and still trying to get creative. At the end of the day, I'm a fan of the game. And I try to be a source of information for people. But not have it be so like buttoned up, right? Cause I'm not buttoned up. So I try to keep it fun and entertaining. I tend to stretch myself thin. I'm constantly taking on new things, but I enjoy the game, man.
You know, and I can relate to that.
I've met, I've met more good people than I've met assholes in the industry. And, you know, depending on if you catch me in the morning, I may be one of those assholes in the industry, you know? So, but I try to keep an open mind and I try to be respectful as I can to whether you're spending $5 with me or we're just talking somewhere when I'm on the road, because that's important to me too, you know? Seeing someone like you, Nate, and everything that you've grown is just inspiring to me. You know, it is. You want to keep on progressing, keep on evolving. You want to have new goals and new standards. And I'm never going to settle, never going to quit. I may get tired and want to take a break every now and then, but we're going to keep on pushing the envelope and just use everything we got. You know, I'm going to be on the road coming up soon. So stuff like these podcasts are great for me because it still keeps me – I don't want to listen to the radio for however many hours a day. You know, I want to, I love pool. I'm a junkie, you know? So, using these avenues and these resources is great. And, I'm still learning how to do all this fancy stuff. I'm proud that I bought a microphone. So that's my second probably investment to the nerd side of things, you know, after my MacBook Pro. But it's important, you know, you want to be having your best foot forward no matter what it is you do. And whether I'm helping build a queue or I'm trying to sell a queue to you or sell you a product, it's good that I enjoy the things that I'm doing. You know, I like working with James and building jump queues because I believe in his product. I think it needs work, but I believe in him. I believe in who he is as a person. I don't think he's a shithead. Some of these companies that I buy from, I think they mean well. I think they're doing good things for the game. So I like supporting people who support the game, and whether I'm sponsoring an Omega Mike stream or I'm jumping on here, you know, wasting everybody's time by giving my 2 cents, I'm going to keep on doing it until people get annoyed with it, I guess. So, yeah.
All right. So here's I'm a big sports fan outside of pool. I mean, I love pool, obviously. That's why I cover it. But I mean, go Bucks, Bucks in six. Woohoo. Come on, man. Give me a little
bit. Hey, you know what? I thought Phoenix was going to go and take it at the beginning of the playoffs just because I watched a lot of the Phoenix Suns games, and I thought they can go and get there on the offensive side of the ball. But the Bucks just showed just stupid amount of heart, and they fought back, man. Even yesterday's game, they were up big, then they go and come storming back the second half, so – And you got to – but you know what? You got to be able to close. I don't care who you are, whether it's pool or basketball or whatever, tennis or golf. You got to have a killer mentality, and you got to go and get there. Whether you're playing a solo sport or you're playing with the team, you got to find a way. The Bucks found a way, man.
Absolutely.
It was a great series too.
Yeah. But where I was going with this, there are people in industries that, you know, they're kind of like – this is the person that you want to talk to if you want to break news, right? There's the Adrian Wojnarowski, that person.
That guy.
Woj is, I think, is what they call him. They have, you have like a Jason Lockenfora for CBS News, and you have the ESPN guy that I'm blanking on his name, that Eric Scheffner, that breaks up like that.
Adam Schefty.
Yeah, Adam Schefty. When people ask me, like, who is Mike and why is he on your podcast? For people that don't know you, I'm like, basically, this guy's the Woj or the, you know, the Adam or the Jason Lockenfora of the pool world. I mean, you know, you're in the know on everything that's happening. You're so plugged into all the backroom negotiations. And I mean, part of it is because you respect, you know, people trust you, right? They respect that you're not going to just give information out for no reason. And, you know, we even saw it on this podcast, which is a bummer, but I mean, I'm sure I'll find out later on, but, and maybe I already know, because I heard something about Tony, but you didn't give the information out on Tony. You're building trust with the players, and that's why you're able to be in the know for all of these things that are happening. If the game gets bigger, how awesome would it be to be able to be, well, first off, let me ask you, do you think that that's kind of your, maybe not your sole role, but do you think that that is something that you do in this industry? And how do you think that puts you for later on if the game ever gets bigger?
I've been asked that, and I get uncomfortable when when I get spoken of like that. But I kind of see, I guess, a little bit of it. I guess I'll leave that for other people to go and kind of put me in there. I know I do go and try to break a lot of stuff and be the one to go and people get information from. When I heard, I think, from Ponozo one time where he had said, you're like the – he's asking me questions about Dennis and the World Championship. That's what it was. And he's like, did Dennis get an invite? And I'm like, why are you asking me? Go ask Dennis. You know, and he's like, well, I don't know how to get a hold of Dennis. you know, so it's cool, man. I enjoy it. I like being a source of getting information because, like I said, I was that guy who was up at 4 a.m. trying to find out links to tournaments. And I do go and respect relationships and friendships that I've built in the industry. I do. People aren't stupid either. They know what I do. So, you know, sometimes they'll come to me and they'll tell me, hey, you know, keep it between us for now until they go and give me the green light. Building bridges and making bridges stronger is what I want to go and do in the industry. I don't want to go and tear anybody down. I don't want to go and knock anyone. I want to be able to go and whether it's promote it or get people excited about it by saying, hey, this match is coming up, or I'm hearing talks between, you know, Dennis and Alex coming up soon or whatever, you know. I want to get people excited about it, you know, and I know, and but I also can respect that some people like a Matchroom want to go and keep their thunder. They want to be the one to get all those shares and get all those interactions. So I'm trying to find a balance with all that stuff. But and just so people know, like, it's the buying and selling, and if I'm raffling something or whatever, that's what bankrolls all this other shit that I do. Because all this other stuff is just a hobby. It's just a passion. You know, when I go to travel to an event, I figure out a way to make it profitable by all the buying and selling. But like the covering of it is all out of my pocket, all of it, you know, whether it's, I don't go to anyone and ask for a hotel or go and ask for a flight or none of that shit. And I'm not too proud to where I can't say I never will, but I haven't yet. Maybe I'm just not smart enough to go and do it. Who knows? But
maybe you hate money too much.
but you know, I figure out a way to get creative to make trips profitable. You know, at the US Open, I was able to line up deals with the Coe brothers to buy, you know, 6 jump cues from them. And that helps them out, helps keep them going. I was able to spend money with Chris Melling and buy a cue from him. And that helps him out. Actually, I spent probably like $6,000 with Chris during the US Open, just buying a bunch of break cues and other stuff from him. But my point is that I don't want to just buy just for the sake of just give me, you know. Yeah, I'm trying to go and make some money on it, but I'm doing it to where I'm going out there and I'm networking and I'm going and giving people updates when it comes to matches that are on the stream table, or going and streaming a match if I'm plugging in my phone and doing stuff like that, whatever it is when it comes to covering or going live from somewhere, paying for a hotel room. It's all from the buying and selling part of it. So, and it, like I said, it helps keeps the players on the road, because whatever it is that I can do, whether it's a lesson with Christina or whatever, if I can go and afford it and find time to go and do it and spend money with you, I'm going to find an excuse to go and do it just to help keep the pool economy going, you know? And a lot of people don't actually know that. So, but I don't like asking for handouts. And only recently did I ever go, I think I approached the second company ever to go and sponsor something, but it was for something completely different, not any of this shit. So I strictly do it for a passion of the game and nothing else. But if I can figure out a way down the road to go and make it profitable and where it makes sense, and I'm not, but I'm going to keep my integrity, because I'll never go and sell my soul to go and get anything from anybody, you know, which is part of the reason why, because I've gotten offered stuff like, hey, I want you to try out this tip or try out this shaft or try out this cue. But I don't want to feel obligated to say something nice about it. I'd rather buy it. And then if I don't like it, I'll keep my mouth shut and I'll just go and sell it, you know. But if I do enjoy it, then, yeah, if we can figure out a way to make it work business-wise, then I'll go and do that too. So it's been a fun roller coaster. I've been able to see a world champion being crowned. I've been able to see a U.S. Open champion being crowned. I would have never thought that being a drunk 10 years ago like I was, because I wasn't in a good place. So to be able to be where I'm at now it's mind-blowing to me, and I never want to take it for granted or take anybody for granted, any customer. I may not always get back to everyone. I may leave some people on read, and it's not intentional. I just get overwhelmed at times, but I'm trying to figure out a way to stay more on top of things. So, yeah, I'm enjoying the ride, man. I love the game.
Well, as somebody who I guess I can relate as far as takes on way too many projects and then just gets swamped in them.
Yeah, you can relate for sure, buddy.
I can relate to that that red comment that you just made. There's a lot of people that, and you know, I respond to them. I really do. It's just here and not, you know, typing out responses, right? You know, I think that I respond to something.
Exactly. Or I'm like,
go on.
Go ahead.
I type it out in my head and then I don't press send. And then I got another distraction over here. And then I got another distraction over here. And then I'm like, I'll get back to that. You know, I got to take care of this right now. And then this never gets taken care of. And then this over here doesn't get taken care of either. And then I come back a week later and someone's like, were you ever going to respond? And I'm like, oh crap. Now I feel like a dork, right? I do it all.
Like a jerk sometimes, man, but it's not intentional. It's just, I spread myself too thin. I guess in that part, it's my fault, you know, but because I do have a hard time saying no, you know, when it comes to stuff like this, you know, and it's funny because the more I take on and then I think about it, I'm like, fuck, man, 3 months ago, I was like, I don't have any hours. I need more hours in the day. And then here I am, like something great comes along, like hopping on with you on Tuesday or Wednesdays. I'm like, yeah, man, I'm in, you know, or doing the Booth Buzz with Mark and Joey. I'm like, I'm in, you know, and because I love it. But then it's like, shit, I got to go and figure out like a way to make it a priority. And I'm not saying these people aren't a priority because they're what helps keeps me going. I'd always tell people this, look, stay on my ass about something. And if you're not going to be bugging me, you know, unless I tell you like, you know, hey, man, don't be sending me messages 20 times a day. But then, I, you know what, I guarantee you by the second or third one, I'll be like, all right, I'm going to handle this right now because, you know, I want to get it taken care of. So, it's a balance and it's a learning curve. And it's funny because now I'm managing James's business and answering his messages and everything he's backed up on. When I'm like, I can go and wake up or fall asleep and wake up to 15 messages overnight, you know. And I remember I used to wake up in the middle of the night doing international business in China and other places. And I could not sleep the whole 8 hours, you know. And anything industry-wise that I get opportunities to go and do or plan out trips or events, I'm going to do it, man. I'm going to do it until I can't afford to go and do it. And fortunately enough for me, up until this point, I've been able to make most of my trips profitable one way or the other, but mostly from buying and selling cues. So who knows what'll happen, man. You know, I'm evolving. So
yeah,
you know, we're going to keep on growing.
Absolutely. So I guess that's really the two big questions. I got some more here, but I think we're running a little long. And when we have a little bit of a content void in the future, we'll get you some more questions out there so that we can really give a profile to who you are and what you do for the industry. But I think that's a good way to start out this. And, you know, good podcast today. I think that's probably a pretty good wrap up. What do you think?
Yeah, man. It was the dynamic duo today. So, yeah, man, I enjoyed it as always. I like keeping it nice and simple and to the point. Let's hit it and let's move on. So I got a lot of respect for you in that regard, Nate.
All right. Well, I guess with that, we'll close off for one more week. Mike, thanks for joining me.
Pleasure, brother.
And everybody else out there, hit them straight. We'll see you next week. Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. If you've liked what you've heard and you want to contribute to the future content that will be made, consider joining the podcast's Patreon at www.patreon.com/queueitup. Becoming a Patreon of the podcast will help to create all of the future content that the podcast will have. Special shout out to Dave Peters, Aaron Taylor, Pete Silsby, Morgan Lupton, Ben Young, Robert Miller, Andy Morse, and Bill Pelham for your generous contributions to the podcast's Patreon. If you ever need any more information on what the Patreon system is or how you can contribute outside of the Patreon, please reach out to the podcast or Nate himself. If you would like to contribute to the podcast for free, consider sharing any podcasts or the podcast page on Facebook itself. Also, leaving a review and a rating if you listen through iTunes. It helps others find the podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back soon with another episode of the Cue It Up podcast.